Welcome, all my knights and ladies, to the podcast that matters when you're listening to the game, and that is the only game that matters, and that is the Game of Thrones. That is right. I am here with my two noble knights, Steve and Luke, and we're going to be discussing everything good, bad, and wrong with the new House of Dragon show that has just premiered on YouTube. We're going to get started with the first episode. So, there's going to be spoilers, everybody. So, you know, spoiler alert, everyone, just so you know, spoilers.
Yep, spoilers.
So, let's just go off and get our overall opinions on the first episode. I will go ahead and go first. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. Loosely based off so far, and this is where we're at, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me, my headset's messed up. This is where we're at so far, ladies and gentlemen. We are not in the Dance of Dragons yet. We are, in fact, still in the Rogue Prince, which is basically the prequel to Dance of Dragons. So if you didn't know that, then you're listening to the right podcast that you want to hear, and you want to know this information, because Daemon Targaryen is a badass, and he does play a huge role in this upcoming show, as well as Rhaenyra Targaryen. But overall, though, I thought it was good. I thought the show was good. I thought it was... So if you've never read The Dance of Dragons, The Dance of Dragons reads more like... And The Rogue Prince, for that matter, reads more of like a historical document. It's more of like almost an outline summary of events that have occurred in Westeros. And the show, so far, seems to play into that pretty well. It seems like they basically took what was George R. Martin's, like, okay, so here's the historical footnotes, and they're like, here is the drama we will write in between that. And that really seems like the way they presented the show. Of course, they've added and exaggerated some things that are not in the book, and we'll get to that here soon. But overall, the show was good, but I think the real failure of it, and this is where a lot of you will be like, what? But you said you liked it. Yes, I did. But I also thought there was a huge, what we like to call here on this podcast, they pulled a Hobbit, basically, and right in the first episode of the show, which didn't need to be done. And but overall, though, it was good. The dragons look awesome. I thought the characters and the cast were really good so far. But go ahead, Steve. I want to hear your take on the first episode of House of Dragon. And, you know, I just want to mention our audience. We are vivid Game of Thrones readers. We have read all the books. I mean, everything under the sun, Ice and Fire, all the lore, everything. You can name it. We have read it.
Yeah. This is a good episode. This is a good one. I think it was split right down the middle, where it's not bad, but it wasn't all the way good. It was just, you know. It was a good start. I think I'm a little intrigued, especially after the, unfortunate events of Game of Thrones ending. So I think a lot of people were timid going into a House of the Dragon show. But I guess it was a safe bet of doing, going this route and doing a Targaryen only show or a Targaryen only thing. I'll talk about the gripes, because I don't have many. The only thing I had a problem, well, one big one, but we'll talk about that one. One of the only misgripes I had about the show were there really isn't thus far. There's not like that, like, little finger in the courthouse kind of stirring up trouble. There isn't really a lot of super intrigue. There's intrigue, but it's not like Game of Thrones crunch intrigue that I'm looking for just yet. But it is the first episode. That's really the only thing I had a problem with. Some other things that may or may not happen in the book of Fire and Blood. But I feel like, yeah, it was good. I like some of the characters. I think Matt Smith as Daemon Targaryen is gonna be. He's good. He's good. I believe it.
I was hesitant at first, but I thought he actually was. As the story progressed, I thought he did a good job, and we'll get more into that character dynamic in a second.
Definitely, I think that the characters are doing their good jobs. I didn't really have any too big of a gripe with the episode, other than it was good. Good solid start.
What'd you think, Luke? And I think this is your first Game of Thrones show, really, isn't it?
I followed Game of Thrones, I believe, up till season 5, and then I just dropped off for my own reasons. And then when the backlash started, I stopped being interested. So
okay. So what did you think of this first episode?
So, yeah, it was pretty good. What I would say is, so we go into this. Well, first off, obviously, quality in terms of production, really, really good. All on display here. Mm-hmm. Could just be me, but I feel that even compared to, like, first season of Game of Thrones, we're already, like, the especially with the editing, camera work, felt a lot tighter, like, near the later seasons when it felt like just watching a full-fledged movie and all that. So, one thing I liked really, really early on was that, I was going to say that, like, I liked how we set up the central tension very quickly with the story. We know exactly what's at the end of this episode. I had a feeling of where this story was going. And I know that obviously the first series had the books to base off of. Those were a little bit more sprawling, a little more interconnected, had a lot more going on. But if you go back to that very first episode of Game of Thrones, what it does is it sets up a lot of different plot points all at once. And then it's all going to play out much larger. With this one, it looks like a much tighter focus on this house. And I know exactly what's going to happen now. We have a vie for power within the Targaryen household.
You're absolutely right.
So we know how it's going to play out. If anything, my biggest criticism would be almost too telegraphed what's going to happen. Because the whole first part, it's like, well, all we need to do is my wife just needs to have an heir and everything is going to be A-okay in the kingdom. Well, I'm just going to have her go off to labor. I'm going to take a big sip of my coffee and you could not even tell more blatantly how that was going to play out.
Right.
I also say moral gray areas that Game of Thrones is often very famous for. This is a little bit off the cuff earlier with that as well.
Yes.
Again, I compare this to that first episode where we had the Starks. Starks were good people. Starks were cool. Ned Stark, he's a good dude. That's the whole point. Ned Stark's a good dude. Then they kill him in the first season, and then it all goes downhill from there. That's the whole point. This time, it feels like these characters are a little squishier, a little grayer. Obviously Matt Smith's character, we go get into that a little bit later. He's a bad dude, but his side of the family and their vie for power is not unfounded. They have a reason to be pissed off. They have a reason to kind of be like a little tense with everybody around there. And then meanwhile, the other side, obviously they're not too fond of the other side, but they're not particularly great themselves. So we have two sides that are, again, this is a story about this, what's going to be a building power struggle, it seems. And it seems that not everybody, there's not anybody necessarily to root for, but neither side seems to be particularly the worst ever. So,
and see, that's an interesting point you bring up. So I want to go ahead and get to the cast, and I want to talk about that. So, you know, we had Paddy Considine as King Viserys Targaryen. We had Emma Darcy as Princess Rhaenyra Targaryen. Matt Smith, of course, is Prince Daemon Targaryen. Otto Rhys Effons is Otto Hightower. And I'll stop there for now. Because what's interesting, what automatically, and this is one of my biggest gripes I have, I love Emma Darcy as a Rhaenyra Targaryen. I think she's perfect. She displays a strong, I'm not trying to say she's not beautiful, because she is. I'm trying to say, but she has a very kind of strong face, and that's Rhaenyra kind of was known for being. And Rhaenyra is kind of like that in the book. She's a strong character. But here's where I got really upset that they took away from the character in this episode, is they took away Rhaenyra's ambition. They make it seem as if this falls into Rhaenyra's lap. But for Rhaenyra, for the most part, after Viserys names her heir, which he actually did earlier on before all this happened, they pretty much, you know, she wants to be queen. She feels like it's her right to be queen. And what later comes down the road, of course, for those of you who don't know, there's obviously a split in the house of the Targaryens, which leads to this civil war. But we're not there yet. This is still far to come. But but when it comes to Daemon too, I thought they did Daemon very well and Viserys very well, because their brother dynamic is pretty much spot on, like from the book itself, because they do this whole, because Daemon is ambitious, as they talk about, even in that council scene. That's a real scene from the book. Like when they're talking about how he's dangerous, he can't be the heir, he'd be another Maegor, which is also interesting how they've also introduced the Iron Throne spurring people. I'm sure Steve reminded me about that. But yes. Basically, Daemon, though, that's the exact line. They're like, Daemon, anybody but Daemon, he'd be another Maegor. And for those who don't know who Maegor is, he was the second Targaryen. Well, he was actually the third Targaryen king who basically killed the Faith Militant. He was a strong dude, and he basically wrote Balerion and burned everything and everyone who disagreed with him to the ground. You also see this dynamic already, which I've noticed, and I don't know whether it was done intentionally by the creators of the show or it's just the way Rhys Infons wanted to do it, but Otto Hightower really does, and I want to see if you agree with me on this, Steve. He comes off as Tywin when he was the Hand. He even almost has a similar voice in the way he addresses Viserys. I mean, like how he's scheming already. It's very Tywin-ish. And in the book, he's kind of like that. Kind of. A little bit more forefront, though. A little bit more honest in things. But he
kind of is in the show as well. He's a little honest.
Yeah, but he hates Daemon. Everybody hates Daemon. But what I loved, what I thought was great, how what they introduced in the show, I loved how they show how Daemon created the City Watch. Because when he actually comes up and does the whole, when I had you, you guys were mongrels, you were starving, and now, you know, we're the gold cloaks, now you're hounds. That's an actual part similar in the books. Basically, it's not done like that, but basically it says that Daemon was once the master of coin, then he was master of laws, and every time he got those positions, Otto basically pushed him out because he thought Daemon was taking too much power, and then he made him master of the City Watch. And when he took over the City Watch, he was like, okay, I'm going to give you guys all swords, we're going to cloak you guys in gold, and we're going to be the gold cloak. So forevermore, now that you watch Game of Thrones or read it, the gold cloaks are connected directly to Daemon Targaryen because he created them. They even say in the show too, you know, you gave him an army 2,000 strong. The gold cloaks love him, and which will play a huge part later on when it comes to Blood and Cheese. If you don't know who that is, you're listening to the right podcast right now. So, you know, but I really thought everybody's character really was spot on, pretty much. I mean,
at least for this first episode.
Now here's some of my biggest gripes here, and this is going to be this is kind of a major one. Now,
the biggest eye-opening one.
I'm gonna talk more about the birth when they have the baby. Like even the prince, the heir for a day, the joke that Daemon does, that's out of the book. That whole scene, I think, was one of the best scenes in Game of Thrones history. I hate to say that now, but it was, because that was exactly how their relationship is. When he's like, did you make that joke? And he's all like, you know, what do you want me to say? And he's just like, you will address me as your king. You know, I'll have your tongue cut out. He's like, your grace. Because that's how Daemon is. Daemon is ambitious, but he doesn't overstep his brother. He doesn't. Daemon would rather become his own king, which he will later on. And if you didn't know that, you're listening to the right podcast. Because he becomes king of the Stepstones. Spoilers. But he will eventually, if the show does it correctly, fly down and get down and bend the knee to his brother and present that crown to Viserys because he loves him so much. That will be later on.
Hopefully.
We'll see. The only thing they've done I'm a little picky with, is they made Daemon a little bit too aggressive, I feel like, on some aspects. But for the most part, I think he's spot on.
For a reason they did that.
Right. Even Masaria, the girl who he's with, the prostitute, that's a real person in the book. That is not a made-up character. This is a girl that will play a huge part in the story. Well, I guess you could say semi-huge part. She's a little bit later on down the road here. But the aspect I thought of the show was good. Now, here's some of my biggest gripes. Like I said, so when the queen basically dies, there was no... It happened, but it was just mentioned in the book. It doesn't happen like that. It wasn't no red wedding, you know, shocking thriller, which I guess that's what they try to do because they want
to have that. It's Game of Thrones.
Have the shock factor.
You got to have the shock value.
Yeah.
That didn't really happen. It just, and the whole, like, they were worried about an heir, but it wasn't really that. Viserys was always in love with Rhaenyra and always was like, you're always going to be the queen. You're my firstborn, you know, the one that survived. And he, oh, in the part where she's the cupbearer is true too. He did bring her around the small council, but he always intended for her to be queen. It wasn't like after the heir was born and whatnot, you know, he basically was like, oh, now you're officially. It was always the thing. But it just was like, if he has a boy, he has a boy, because that's what the realm, you know, that's what the laws are.
Yeah, I think they were just kind of trying to do that in this episode.
Yes, they were trying.
They just ran out of time. How long did we get to that scene?
How Rhaenyra's like, you've never even spoken to me since mom died. That's not true. Like, Viserys loved his daughter. Viserys is, he's kind of like the old king in a lot of ways. The old king was a king of peace. He was a guy that helped, you know, rule the realm for like 15 plus years of peace in Westeros. But that's kind of what Viserys wants to do, because he himself was actually kind of thrown into being king. He wasn't meant to be king himself, and he lived during the time of Maegor and everything. I mean, what else do you want to add to it, Steve? I mean, I got plenty of more to go off of.
Well, I would just say, like, the biggest thing about it, I mean, since we're talking about gripes, is you know, he just mentions, he name drops, he title drops, right? He
goes, oh, God, this okay, is the, right now.
Yeah, yes, okay, yeah, I mean, he got to say it.
Okay, the biggest gripe of this whole show is when Viserys is talking to Rhaenyra and he goes, I the prophecy of a song of ice and fire. Me and Steve talked about this the first day after this episode, and for both of us, it was like, you know, when you're watching that football game and it's tied and you think your team is right going to win, you know, they're going right for the end zone. And all of a sudden, boom, interception, and the other team runs it back for a touchdown. It was kind of like that.
It wasn't kind of. It was like that. It was like
I was like, shut, you know, this is me when I watched that. I was like, why?
He said that.
Explicitly saying the song of ice and fire?
Yes.
Yeah.
Might as well have said this was written by George R. R. Martin. That's what Steve said, which I thought was great.
You know what? I did say that, and I feel like George R. R. Martin should have just walked in and, like, you know, like, yes, Manchester Robes and been like, my lord.
Yes, I wrote
get it.
Yeah, with his little train hat and everything, just totally out of character.
I'm intrigued by the scene itself just because
it didn't happen.
Because of,
It never happened.
It never happened?
It never happened. That's why it's interesting, because, hold on, look, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to finish this thought here, is that the reason, like, this is such a pet peeve of mine is because it's just like The Hobbit. This, of course, as they even reference in the beginning, takes place almost 175 years before Dany. And what's crazy is this prophecy has nothing to do with the current story. Absolutely nothing. It only really comes into fruition during Aegon V. That is a few years after this, but it has nothing to do with the story. And the writers actually said, and they went back and they said, we wanted to tie in the series and give you a wink and the nod to this one. And I'm like, why? It's not needed.
Here's
why. No, I'm going to give you the reason why. And this is going to be my biggest stab at them as writers. Is this to justify your crappy writing of the last show? Are you going to do something like, well, there had to be a Targaryen on the throne in order for her to cleanse the corruption of King's Landing?
Yes.
That's exactly what they're going to do.
That's it.
They're going to justify putting this prophecy, which they didn't even use, because Arya killed the White Walker.
Yeah, they did. Technically, it did not happen, Rob, because we are 152 years in the past.
Could it that though also be in reference then to Jon? Because Jon Snow led the assault against the White Walkers.
Jon Snow's
technically a Targaryen.
Technically.
Technically.
So I don't
Never
know.
Sat the Iron Throne.
I feel like that's what's in reference to that. Like, yeah, that actually inadvertently Jon Snow was he was the Targaryen in reference.
But even so, and I agree with you there, even if that was the reference, and I'm not being, like, rude to you, Luke, it's just because I've read the book so much, and I just know, and this is also, too, why I think it's dumb that they cut the ambitions out of Rhaenyra and the Targaryens and how they are actually conquerors but bad governors, is I really think they're just trying to justify the bad thing. But Jon himself, it wouldn't make sense if that was the prophecy was leading to basically the Targaryens to be that Jon was the last one. You wouldn't think that would be the prophecy. Like, hey, guess what, guys? Our whole lineage is going to end out with this last guy, and he's going to be north of the wall, and, you know, that's that.
And then he leaves. But, I mean, then you're getting into the whole thing about, you know, the prince that is promised. You know, I feel like this, man. As a whole, this show, tailing in from, you know, obviously Game of Thrones' last two seasons of mistakes – this episode was like an hour, I think, right? An hour and 12 minutes with the credits. They were establishing new surroundings, new characters with old backgrounds and familiar stories. So they have the first shot was a dragon, right? You saw a Targaryen riding a dragon in
over a city that didn't notice. Did you notice that?
They didn't even care. Because, I mean,
they've seen normal. Dragons.
It's normal. But I'm saying, like, you're seeing a Targaryen on a dragon with people not screaming, right?
Right.
So that's your cleansing moment. Hey, here's the purest form of when people love Game of Thrones, which is a Targaryen on a dragon doing dragon things, right? Landing, everything's peaceful. Then they had the javelin, right? They had the whole battle there. What was one of the coolest things in the first episode of Game of Thrones? Remember, they had the whole javelin thing. The tourney. So they played it safe. They did things where they thought people were going to enjoy it. It worked. They had the gore with the birth of the child, and you know what I mean? You have to have that. You have to have shock and awe, just like they did in the pilot of Game of Thrones. Not to say it's a one-to-one ratio, but I felt like they're trying to tell the audience, yes, this is Game of Thrones. We have new writers, so it's new storytelling. We still have the same gore. It's still going to be the same show. Here are the same effects. It's going to still have that same hard writing. Give these actors a chance to tell the tale. But when you name drop, you know, it was cringy, but it wasn't like, I'm going to stop forever. It was just, don't do that again. Hopefully don't name
drop. I just feel like this is going to play off too, because the Civil War has nothing to do with this. It has everything to do with the ambition of Rhaenyra being like, no, I'm queen. And she's against her brother Aegon, who's basically like, no, I'm king.
I'm kidding.
That's what happens.
So who knows? And then, yeah, I'm with Luke on this too, dude, where it's like they are doing this. They're sowing the seeds of what you already know Targaryens are going to do, right? They're Targaryens. Right. What do you think they're known for in their bloodline? But again, I think they're kind of gradually getting people that were casual fans back into the Game of Thrones lore, like gradually, rather than smacking them over the face with pushing a boy out of a window. You know what I mean? Something like that. So they're trying to really get people's attention back. That's my personal take on that.
Okay. I wanted to know, what did you guys think of Cornus Velaryon being I always want to call him Cornelius for some reason.
Cornus.
Yeah, it's Cornus, known as the Sea Snake. And if you don't know what we're talking about, I'm going to give you a little prediction out there, our audience. He's going to join Daemon. And they're going to go conquer the Stepstones. That's what's
another. We're in spoilers. This whole thing is spoilers.
What did you guys think of? Because I haven't heard any kickback, or maybe there has been, I haven't heard it.
There has been.
About him being black.
Oh, I didn't care.
Yeah, I didn't care.
I don't care either, because one, it's a mythical land called Westeros. Second of all, the Velaryons are said, like, the Velaryons are supposed to be, of course, I know you know the steep, they're like the workers of the of old Valyria. So they pretty much are like the Targaryen workers, and they themselves what's interesting, and this is why I like Game of Thrones, is because throughout the history of Game of Thrones, certain players had a bigger role than they did later on. So, like, House Velaryon, from what people are seeing right now, was a huge house in the early years of Westeros, but because of this war in particular, the house will kind of go to ashes. And you'll see a lot of things that happen to a lot of great houses, like Sir Criston Cole of House Strong. That's another house that's going to be gone in the ashes. The High Towers will never be the same again after this war. The Targaryens, of course, will never be the same. I mean, we know how it ends. But basically, this is going to be, and I hope, because the dragons look great. Syrax look great. Caraxes looks amazing. You didn't like the way the Bloodworm looked?
I didn't. No, not really.
You didn't like the wings on the feet?
It was cool, but I would say when he's in his staple, didn't look so cool.
Gotcha. Everyone's excited to see Sunfire, which of course is but this is what's funny, because this is how I know people, a lot of people don't read the books. They just kind of go off the media. Everyone's like, oh, Sunfire, Aegon's dragon. It's so cool. Man, that dragon lasts for maybe like two fucking pages. And then he's like, goes away forever. Well, not forever.
But I understand the hype. You know what I mean? To see that dragon on screen. All of this is supposed to be on screen, but then taking it from somebody's like Luke's perspective, which is great because we know the lore and the knowledge of the book. But then someone like a newer audience member watching it is what I'm really trying to like engage with. Is like, this scene wasn't really written specifically for the hardcore people, because it's hard. How are you going to get somebody who knows the lore through and through, like you, Luke, like you, Rob, and then get somebody like Luke who's just watching this? You know what I mean? So it's, you got to meld these two together.
They did a good job
because there wasn't anything that was like, oh my God, why did they do that? No, I understood why they did that. And it
wasn't
was
like
to
the,
digest
they took, when the chicks took over Dorne. It wasn't like that.
That was a little like, what the? No one in accepted that, right? But again, we're just talking about the pilot. Talking about what, you know, how how it was. I felt like, again, like one of the things you were saying, Rob, about Daemon Targaryen's ruthlessness. I felt like they had to do that. I'm for it because they're really trying to press that. Like, he's not bad per se, but he's just.
He's not good either.
He's not good guy either. So
Daemon is kind of like, it's hard. He's a mixed bag. He's like a gray Jedi, if that makes any sense for those who know Star Wars. He's kind of
Jedi dabbling in dark arts, kind
of. He does his own thing. And for those of you who don't know, yes, spoilers alert, him and Rhaenyra will have a pretty big thing going on later on in the book.
A spoiler for anybody. I'm sorry. I know people want to see it happen.
The Targaryens are incestual.
Everyone, I mean, come on.
Everyone should know that right now. So
they were not
that, then. Yes, they were. When he puts the chain on her neck.
Yeah, just like staring at her pretty much, and her staring at him and laughing. And
what was interesting is a lot of people thought. And they said, you know, Daemon looks like he's mourning the death of the loss of the queen. But did you see the look he gives, like, the bodies? And he gives Rhaenyra as if, like, that look is his way to the throne now. Like, he knew Viserys was going to be like, no, not you, Daemon. Rhaenyra. And so he kind of gives this look of, like, that's how I get to the throne right there.
Kind of, maybe. I mean, because it's...
That's my take on
that.
That's
the throne. I think that's the game within the Game of Thrones, is kind of knowing the conversations that take place on screen. You know what I mean? Seeing
the
actions of the eyes.
The Iron Throne spurning people.
Yeah.
This is new and interesting. And first of all, too, I want to also knock HBO for trying to... Okay, just because you put a bunch of little swords around the steps of the Iron Throne does not make it look like the Iron Throne from the books. The Iron Throne from the books is... I don't think anyone will ever recreate that thing. That thing is just...
Yeah, you can.
It's supposed to be huge, right?
Yeah, it's a mountain. It's basically a mountain of swords that have been melted into steps with... top.
I did like how it looked, how like was the whole thing was covered in swords, and it looked much
imagine that pushed up a little higher, like a mountain with more steps. That's how it's supposed
I thought it was interesting that like it clearly looked dangerous versus how it did in the Game of Thrones, where it was like it's pretty much, it was pretty ceremonial at that point. So
right.
And I agree, Luke. I agree. I was like, I like this
about that is how the king cut himself, which will play a part later on, because this is obviously the way you can already get the foregone conclusion this is going to affect him. But this
wait, before you go to the next point there, Rob, just to go back on what you said about it spurring him, when did it happen when he spurred him? It happened
kind of at the end, right after
he scolded his brother, like literally right. The moment after he said it, like the last word, he was like, oh, my finger, and he got cut. And I was
the interesting thing about that is that never happened.
That's what I'm saying. It's like
Viserys was actually meant to sit the Iron Throne. Yeah, now, that happened to Maegor the Cruel. Yeah, they found him dead in the Iron Throne, which is why they believe the Iron Throne will kill you if you are not the rightful ruler. Now, interesting enough, later on when wink, wink, spoilers, I'm not even going to tell you the context, my audience, but when Rhaenyra does actually sit in the damn thing, it is said in the books that when she walks away, she's trailing blood because the throne spurned her so much. So, and you know, it was even in the Song of Ice and Fire. They actually just didn't mention a lot of this stuff in the original show, because Joffrey never liked to sit in the throne either, because it used to cut him. Neither did Robert. Well,
that's why they kind of alluded. I remember they were alluding to the fact that, like, when he was on the throne, he was always sitting like sideways. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
If you go back and see every scene, he's never just sitting on the, like, because Robert Baratheon was sitting with both hands up.
It used to cut him.
But like he was sitting kind of like hunched over on two of the things every time, or like laying in the chair, or he was sitting like with his mom, like next to the chair. So it's always something weird. But the spurring of the thing, I don't know. Like I said, this is just the beginning episode. I just hope they don't really
overdo
that again, where they're just really trying to write a story for the chair. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, I get that the chair is symbolic. I don't need the chair to be a character in the show.
Right, because Viserys is the rightful king. It never spurned him. It just that didn't happen. He just kind of, you know.
It, like, cut him, like, oh, did you just make a mistake there? Did you?
Yeah.
Why did you scold your brother? You know what I mean? It's like, don't do that.
You know, cauterizing the wound would be best, my lord.
Yeah, right.
Which I thought was interesting.
That was
The King's Council part was really interesting as well, because you had Lord Breezeby there, which was funny because that guy, oh, man, does he get it later. He's an interesting character. I really thought that I liked how they mentioned, though, they already started and kind of alluded to the Stepstone War. You know, when they talked about the Triad, that is actually really out of the book. They talked about the Crab Feeder, which is really, really interesting. Remember this guy, our audience, because this guy, you reap what you sow. And just put it this way, Damon makes sure. So this guy is also he gets his. So if you want to know why he's called Crab Feeder, just do the math, and you know, Steve Irwin, that guy. But but that's what's gonna happen to that dude. But beyond that, that was I have to say, I think that was everything from the first episode. I thought, again, they did a lot of mentioning of Damon. They got, and where they're at in the Rogue Prince is pretty much 25% of the way. Because they mentioned his like, I loved how they said, you know, he talked about his bronze bitch, his wife in the Vale, who he never sees. He even mentioned, that's straight out of the book, how the men fuck sheep in the Vale because the women are too ugly. That's a real quote from him. So for the most part, I thought this episode was good. I just don't like the callbacks to the original Game of Thrones, because I don't think it's needed. Because for me, as always, I always tell people, I hate when movies do that. Like, you know, it's like all of a sudden they just jump back and go, hey, remember you're watching Terminator? Or, hey, remember that was in the first Harry Potter? That's what that reminds me. That's what that is. They might as well just do that. That's what.
Yeah. It's a safe bet, though, Rob. I don't really mind it too much, because it's a safe bet. They're just trying to appease everyone here. They're like, look, we understand you didn't like the last season of Game of Thrones, right? So we have to allude. Hopefully, just in this pilot, they're just doing that, like, subtle nods of, like, hey, this is a new start. You know, new show, enjoy these characters. We're starting off really strong. Lots and lots and lots of money on these dragons and cinematography.
Which are going to be prominent. This is going to be, every dragon lover's wet dream.
I feel I feel like they're going to hold off on a lot of that because like there were some
proof, it only like, happens. I mean, Steve, let's be honest. Like, and we're gonna be honest with you, our Game of Thrones audience, unless they exaggerate a lot of things in this season, because we haven't read any of the leaks. I haven't personally, because I don't care. Because I don't think you need to leak this for me to honestly know the story. I already know the goddamn story.
Now you just want to watch the show.
I think they're going to hold it up because it didn't really happen too much in the book. I mean, it happens when the dragons do fight.
A handful of times, I think.
When the dragons fight, it's usually one that's bigger against the other, of course, because we know what, Aemon One-Eye, wink, wink, basically when he comes around, he's riding the biggest dragon around from the original Conquering Three. I think it's Vraxes who he's riding, or it's either Vraxes or Vhagar. It's one of the two. But, yeah, he's riding one of the original ones, so it's the biggest dragon in Westeros at the time, and he's just, he's just kind of running over everybody, and that's basically what's going on. And the only person he can't run over is Daemon.
Yeah.
So
what's your scores, you guys? What are you guys gonna give the this pilot first episode
for being House the first Dragon. Episode of House of the Dragon? I have to say, I would give this first episode, I'd give it a 7.5. I thought it was really good. I thought it was everything I expected it to be and more. Like, I expected them to go off the book, but I also didn't. I expected them to do their own kind of writing, but I didn't think they would go off of it that well. Like, they really did follow, like, the dynamics of Daemon and Viserys really well. That's my favorite part, because that's my favorite part about the Rogue Prince, is their whole complications between being brothers. Mm-hmm. Because, Daemon, the Rogue Prince literally starts out with, he was the son of a king, the brother of a king, the king of the Stepstones, and he would never be a king. He'd basically never been king in Westeros. And that's the whole point, is, like, everyone's like, he will never be king. He's Daemon,
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it's just, it's the chase for Daemon in the whole show. And you're just going to see what's going to go on with him. Is there mischief? And for new people, like, who is this guy? Is he going to try to kill his brother? What's his deal with his niece? Are they going to do the turn? So there's so much intrigue, I feel.
Does Mushroom come into the show?
This might, right?
For those of you who don't know, Mushroom is a guy who supposedly helped Daemon with his big member.
We already saw Daemon's troubles in this episode with his member, so I don't know if we need to see any more of that, but I'm impressed with it. I hope it does well.
Luke, Steve, what's your score?
I'm gonna give it an 8. Very well made. I'm intrigued to see where this goes. It is very easy that this story will once again devolve into just, triteness, and easy solutions if the plot gets too overcomplicated. But we'll see.
Yeah, same. I think so too. I think I'm going to give it probably I'm going to give it an 8. I really like this one. I watched it twice.
I watched it a few times.
Yeah, because I was like, I gave it the.
I was going to watch it a few times. I love Daemon. Me and George R. Martin share that. George R. Martin's favorite Targaryen is Daemon Targaryen. I must have read The Rogue Prince like at least 10 times.
I got to say, what's his face? Who does his. Mark Smith, I believe, right, is his name. He's doing a good job. At first, I'm not gonna lie, he looks ridiculous. Matt Smith. His wig was ridiculous at first. I was just like, this guy and this wig, it looked dumb. But then when
I think the only good one is on the black actor because the white kids look cool.
I think they kind of went with a normalized, like, giving him some dreadlocks, so it makes it look a little.
I want to point out too. They also already hinted towards their alliance because remember when they're in the small council and he's all like, he's like, we need to discuss your heir, Otto, and he's like, king has an heir. Let's just say his name, Daemon Targaryen. And then later on when like he's like, hey, you need to not be, making a scene of all the criminals, and he's just like, he goes, the city, the criminals should fear the city watch, Your Majesty.
Dude, boy, did they, chopping off hands. That was a very cool and fast scene where there's like thief right here, cut his hand off.
Right,
you know
what
I mean? Raper, cut. You know, at first when I first watched it, I thought he shoved the sword up his ass. I was like, what did he do?
Right.
It was so quick, right? And it was dark.
Like, Raper gonna get a stick up the butt.
Yeah, but then when I watched it the second time, I'm like, oh, that wasn't up the butt, dude.
No, that was literally his money sack right there.
Yeah. Right.
So. That, of course, has been this episode of Ribbon Real Sharks, Ribbon Real Sharks, Ribbon Real Sharks, Ribbon Real Sharks. That was fun. I love these. And if you're wondering, do we have a banner for these episodes, Luke? Yes, we do.
Hell yes.
We have a banner, and it's in the house quote is, ride more sharks, less dragons.
Ride more sharks.
Ride more sharks, less dragons.
Upside down flayed shark.
Yeah.
I did like it, though. I thought the show was good. I am excited to watch it, though.
I just want to see who else they're going to include. You know what I mean? Because they just included the core people, which is good. Well, you have to do that. But who else?
Well, there's going to be some. Well, I should have mentioned this, too. Actually, I found out how long. It's only going to be 4 to 5 seasons. Which they said is not long. I'm like, that's still long.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it's going to be. And it makes sense.
Game of Thrones is technically 7 seasons, right? Yeah.
I believe so. And it makes sense, though, where they're at, because they are literally only on like 25% of the way.
And I feel like they're going to be going like this, Rob. They're going to be like second episode's going to be cutting some stuff, and we're going to get right to it. I think they're going to get right to it.
I think the next episode will be about they're going to obviously am I still recording this? I need to. It's probably going to be Alicent is going to start to get close to the king, like Otto wants her to, which was not really in the book. He just kind of suggests that he marries his niece. He never kind of like goes, hey, you know,
go over there and actually seduce this dude.
He never does that.
Does he say council or something, or he's just like consoling him?
They're in the council, and he basically is like, "How about my niece?" He's like, "She's the right age." That's basically what he says. So that's going to be a bigger thing. Well, I don't know. It's going to be interesting if they do a time jump, because they might do a time jump in this.
I mean, we saw older actors in the preview, so I don't know. They might jump between timelines and might go back and forth.
They might, because in the story, if you remember, Steve, how it reads out like historical stuff, like for example, like Aemon One Eye, you know, he loses his eye to basically who's his cousin, one of Rhaenyra's kids, and you know that basically never leaves him forever. So it's going to have to be kind of either a footnote or actually in the show where they show what happens to him.
And they're going to have to, because that's a big thing that happens in the
book. Yeah,
they're going to show it. Yeah. I really hope they don't flip back and forth. But I was going to do like Luke. I wanted to ask you, like, since you only watched 5 seasons and this is going to go 5 seasons, out of those 5 seasons of Game of Thrones, were you intrigued all the way up?
Intrigued by it? You want to be
like, as far as just like, I'll watch the next season. I'll watch it. Or are you just like, I guess I'll watch it.
Let me think. Well, so what I'd heard is that the dialogue had dropped. And also at that point, I knew that they were getting away from the books. So I don't know. Maybe it was a sense of like, well, this isn't tech. This no longer even feels canon at this point.
You kind of stopped at the right point. I'm not gonna lie, bro, like after season 5 it does start getting like
because it is technically still based off of George R. Martin's outline, but he famously rewrites a whole bunch of stuff, so
by the way, he said he's given up on predicting when's a winner's gonna come out, like an
he's like I'm not gonna timetable.
there was a article, so there was like a YouTuber that kind of broke down his the 6 book progress based off of like what he said.
I've seen this, and
I don't know if we've talked about this before, but like obviously
he should be farther along,
but basically if we just go off of what he says, like giving it a generous read every time he updates on progress of the book, he may only really have the stuff he cut from the 5th book done. Like, that's all he might have at that point.
Out of all that guy put together, really?
Because again, he cut out a lot of stuff for, like, the last one was Dance with Dragons, right?
Dance with Dragons.
Yeah.
And so he cut all that out. It was about, supposedly, it was about like 200 to 300 pages. And based off his...
I've heard he's lost his way from people close.
And based off of his, what he has told people, progress, in terms of what he has like said on his blog, in terms of like what he has said in terms of tangible progress he has on the book, you could really basically cover it all under the purview of that 300 pages he cut from the six. So he may not have any additional material
at all over these years.
He may not have anything like solid ready for ready for any manuscript review. So like,
this doesn't even count
getting the manuscript finished for his publishers,
right? Like,
go through the editing and then come back. So.
And coming back and then being finally published, the man has no new. Well, we might have to break down.
That's what's happened so far with Patrick Rothfuss and the King's Killer Chronicles. Some his agents have even said that they think he just hasn't written anything yet.
But didn't he kind of semi-quit when he was like working on another show?
Yeah,
that was like simultaneously at the end of Sharknado. Oh Jesus Christ, dude! I don't know what to make of him. Like, I kind of want to give him a break. Like me and Rob did though. I felt like we gave him a break. We were like the ones that were being on his side. Like, no, let him write, give him the time. And then you got to look at what happens with your work, dude. Like, look, your show gets your work gets a televised show. Yeah. It's one of the greatest shows of all time.
Yeah, because it's
only to basically just be ruined. You can't watch the show anymore because you know how it ends.
I really think it's because it is a book. And so like R.R. Martin knows it's got like, it has the long arm of history on that kind of like, with the because film and TV is still a very new medium, and obviously some TV shows and films still stand up, but you know it's very easy for a book to still stay. You know, we have books from 400, 300 further back that we still teach in classes that still get published, and not only that, they still get read just like casually by people, not obviously in huge amounts, but still. So I don't know, maybe he has just like been paralyzed by the idea of finishing the series,
or so you're saying we should freeze
doesn't them. Care at this. I mean, I don't know why.
I'm going to give my opinion again, and I've made this prediction. Then we got to go because I really think this is what it is. So a lot of people don't know that George R. Martin actually wrote the TV show of Beauty and the Beast. He's actually had some other fantasy shows that have been out, and they get canceled. So I thought George R. Martin was probably like, you know what? I'm going to write something so fucking good that everyone's going to love it. And when they want more of it, I'm just going to be like, fuck them.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I also want to say, yeah, because you also have to look at, because I don't know who he is as a person, but I do know that, you know, he's at this point probably sitting cool on at least $1 million off of everything he's made from his writing. And he's now pushing into his... He's now pushing into his 70s. So it's like, what's even the motivation to fit? Like, what's even the motivation to finish it?
Yeah. Because for the fans that have been, you know, basically flogging this guy for the past, like, what, 5-6 years now? So,
what does he even owe the fans at this point? Yeah. His guts.
Like, and then just like you said with Rob, maybe that was his plan all along.
Why would you feel that you owe them anything at that point? The way they treated him online, the way they turned on the whole series with the HBO show, it's like, what?
You know, he went back and rewrote it. He even said he did.
Because he hated the ending. He did that to save face for himself, though. That was a very egotistical thing.
That's hilarious, too, because I think that I actually feel that if R. Martin had, like, you know, if we had the time like the book probably had, that final would have made more sense. I think it would have made sense.
It actually makes sense in the realm of George R. Martin, but I think, honestly, I think he was just fucking with them the whole time, especially when they got to the I don't believe that part at all.
There's supposedly a Twitter anecdote, and this was written before. And this tweet came out years before the scene, and it supposedly was a person was at a convention. Somebody said at the elevator, George R. Martin came up. He said, hold the door. Held it for him, obviously, got in. And he made an offhanded comment like, oh, hey, hold the door. Sounds a little bit like Hodor. Yeah. And supposedly George R. R. Martin told him like, oh, that's a – or something's like, you'd be surprised about that. Something about like – something coy about like, oh, that's interesting.
Stupid. It was so
– but
oh, no. It was hard to watch.